Matt. We're an interracial couple with two kids wanting to do something that highlights the power of friendship and what it means to be in the company of true friends. We're going to move our society away and out of the loneliness epidemic and into a friendlier, happier world. Welcome to Our Friendly World. Better, stronger, together.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Hello. Hello. You know, the sound of the ocean, the sound of ocean waves. I'm getting right into it. First, nugget of wisdom from Santa Monica this time. It's the sounds that I heard from Santa Monica. That was my lesson. I, as a small child, as you guys know, I talk about my mentor, Santa Monica, all the time. But as a child, now that I'm looking back on it, it makes sense. One of the reasons I felt so calm and taken care of. I think it was the sound of the ocean waves. What is it about that? It's like the sound of shh, shh, shh. Like, I don't know how that came across the microphone, but you know when we had our babies and the doctors would say, that shh sound calms them. On an extreme level, they would say even the sound of a vacuum cleaner calms them. And I'm like, why? That is ridiculous. And they would say it could be the sound of just being in utero, right? Mm-hmm. All the pipes going, I guess. I don't know how you describe it. But, you know, the sounds of water. You're yes. In water, right? And so the sounds of the waves, I guess it's kind of like it reminds you of a breath coming in and going out. Deep breath in, deep breath out. Matt, why are you looking at me like that? Stop it.
Sorry, can't help it.
Do you not understand what I'm saying?
No, I do.
I mean, the ocean, it is life. It teaches you so much. Just sitting there, the waves come in, the waves go out, and it's so powerful. Even if you're just there with your toes in the water, like barely the water reaches your ankles, but you feel like your entire body will get sucked into the deep, deep ocean when the tide goes out, when the water goes back out. It's a huge pull. It's very powerful. Much like the sound, it just made me, it was like a mother, a kind, loving mother or a parent shushing me and saying it's okay. Shushing in a good way. Don't laugh at me.
No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And so today I want to talk about, I call it breaking the sound barrier. And I want to talk about communication. And I wanted to talk about tone and sound. I'm now addicted to looking things up. Let me see. Tone. Let's look it up. Noun. A musical or vocal sound with reference to its pitch, quality, and strength. 2. The general character or attitude of a place, piece of writing, situation, etc. Much like you, Matt, you will say something to me and I will say, I don't appreciate your tone.
Oh,
and you
dear.
You don't understand, and we get into a fight over tone because you didn't feel like you expressed yourself a certain way, but to me, it was a horrible tone, but you don't hear it, but I heard it, you know.
Right, because I understand the intent behind it, but you hear only what is said.
I hear a nasty tone, not what you said, but like a mean tone sometimes.
Right.
And it makes a difference. Like even with email, right, you always say you can never hear tone in an email.
Right.
You don't know. It may sound nasty, but the person may have not had that intention.
Right.
Or the other way around.
Right, exactly.
The tone is a big deal. Okay, so the definition continues. A tone is the kind of sound you hear in a musical note or in a person's voice, live or in writing. Look at that. So, for example, when Elle was born, I did not read to her Good Night Moon. I read to her the journals from Bruce Lee. the different ways to strike a person, right? And then there's this other book that we have on all his athletic feats and his day-to-day, his journal on how to work out. And that's what I would read to, and she would go to sleep like that. Because the tone, it was about the tone. And I remember a long time ago when I was a kid, I loved black and white movies. And there was this really old movie back in the day when people wore hats and gloves. And there was a guy who was reading the newspaper to this newborn. And he was reading the races, like, you know how they would bet on horse races?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he read. And I think that's when tone really came into my existence. Like, wow, look at that. You can read something like that and make it sound like a lullaby. It's all about tone and intention. Right, Matt?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I totally get that. As a matter of fact, yeah, just this past week, I rediscovered a musical artist who redoes actually songs, and I listened to some of them, and one of their remakes, it completely, using the exact same words, completely changes the tone of the song, changes the meaning of the song even just by changing how it's performed.
Exactly. And bear with me, because this will really come down to our friendly, by the way, welcome to our friendly world.
by the way,
I forgot to introduce us, but you know, that is key. That is one of the keys with friendship, with creating a friendlier world, is to really hear each other properly and to understand the undercurrents or the forces that you don't see, even with sound, with the forces that you don't hear, but you feel. I'm almost done with the definitions. Here we go. So where does tone come from? So I'm really into the
etymology.
Thank you.
Etymology. Now
I know.
Continue to the next word.
Okay. Derived. Now I can't talk at all. Derived from tenos. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Okay. Some Greek is about to come in. Do you know that it's derived from tenos and the tension of the string of an arrow bow and the noise that was produced when the arrow was shot? So that's what tone, that's where tone comes from. Did you know that?
I can totally feel that.
And then I looked up, like, what is sound? It's a sensation produced through the ears. Late 13th century, from old French, S-O-N, son, sound, musical note, voice. From Latin, sonus, sound, a noise. The etymology of sound is derived from the Anglo-Saxon or Old Norse word sund. Again, I apologize for my pronunciation, which also means swimming. Did you know that? The word sund, S-U-N-D, is documented in Old Norse and Old English as meaning gap or narrow access. In geography, a sound is a large sea or ocean inlet, deeper than a bright and wider than a fjord, or a narrow sea or ocean channel between two bodies of land. That's interesting, because sound is like the vibration, and the land is in fact us. Do you know where I'm getting at? Like,
maybe
we are the land, the water, the sound. It's, I take it as a direct correlation to our connections as human beings. The sound, the water, the actual sound, the land, you know, the interplay. Why are you looking at me like...
I'm sorry, I gotta stop looking at you.
Why? Oh my God.
Well, no, I'm thinking. I'm drawing my own, like, connections and inferences, but... Go ahead.
Okay. Your eyes are scaring me.
I know,
anyway,
but that's
so anyway,
my thoughtful look.
All right. So here's where our super friend comes in. Michael Jolly is here, everyone. Please meet Michael. Michael, please talk to us, because you are the expert. You bring in the metaphysics. You bring in sound, listening, consciousness. You're an inventor. I would say a scientist. You've invented this amazing now, these discs that for 3 minutes give you a heightened state of meditation. I feel, I just got these in the mail recently. We are so excited. It's making our house completely buzz and vibrate in such a beautiful way. And it takes me right back to the ocean, which, you know, Matt, I miss so much because somehow we're living in the middle of the continent and I feel like a ship, not a ship. I feel like a fish out of water. Like I can't breathe. I need water. Anyway, Michael, I'm hello, sorry.
Michael, welcome. Hello.
Welcome to our friendly world, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a very friendly reminiscence of Santa Monica and the ocean also. Thank you for setting up my entry with some sound memories.
Thank you so much for being here. We've been wanting to talk to you, and we scheduled a little meeting beforehand, and Matt refused to talk to Michael because I know. So Michael, I met Michael last week at a convention, or this week, I don't remember. And through Michael, we met Barry, who we interviewed a few days ago. We had such a great time. I was talking to Barry, and Barry was saying such amazing things about Michael, which I already sensed anyway, because as soon as I heard Michael speak at this convention, I was blown away, one, by his beautiful voice, but by the way this man speaks. He is an exceptional human being. I think, Matt...
You're making a pretty high bar there.
I'm sorry. But I think you guys are actually best friends.
I aspire to all of that. Let me put it that way.
I think you guys are best friends. And so Matt didn't want to talk to Michael because he wanted to keep it fresh for this episode. But I'm going to let you guys talk now. Go ahead.
What she's referring to is just, I started like riffing, and that's what happens when I connect with some people, is all of a sudden it kind of generates different and new and glorious thoughts, and attempting to kind of invent that or have that conversation over again can be problematic. So yes.
Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, you want to have a conversation in the now.
Exactly. that's cute. In the now.
You guys,
not in the know.
These discs are called the now. These, we'll get into it. And we're going to have them in the show notes. When you guys go to the show notes, you can totally hear the experience. 3 minute of tone meditation. Michael will describe it better, of course. Michael, can we start from the beginning? Can you tell us all about yourself? How did this start? How did you get into sound? Who are you? Tell us everything. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, Fawn and Matt. It's lovely to be here. I'm speaking to you from Tampa. It's East Coast time here at this moment. I love these images of the description of tone and also sound and waves and water. Let's see, I came here from the island of Martha's Vineyard off the coast of Cape Cod. The two are separated by Nantucket Sound.
Heyo.
And I would take a ferry boat back and forth a few times a week to go from the island to the mainland on the Cape. And the ferry boats, these ferry boats had twin engines, and the two engines would come in and out of sync with their sort of the throbbing of the diesel motors. So you'd get these pulsing, you know, you get this wobble 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 wobble. And so those low frequency pulsations can really move you into a meditative state, because that kind of amplitude pulsation in that frequency range helps set up what we would call an entrainment, a brainwave entrainment situation, where the brain recognizes those low frequency sounds as being something that's pleasant. The kind of brain waves that are generated when you're in an open monitoring meditation, or you're sort of gazing out onto the mid distance across the ocean. You'll find that you have more brain waves in the lower frequency range, alpha brain waves, delta brain waves, as opposed to the kind of faster beta brain waves that when you're having a conversation, you're solving a puzzle, you're doing something like that. So so traveling back and forth on the ferry, I was exposed to these very powerful low frequency brainwave entrainment frequencies. And then I would very quickly fall into a relaxed, open monitoring meditation. And that was through sound and the brainwave entrainment. But that's recent history. That's not my earliest memories of being in the fog when I was 5 years old.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. What do you mean?
Yeah, what is this fog? When
you said that, it took me to Santa Monica because we had, what was it called, Matt, when the
marine layer.
Marine layer. Yeah.
So it was always overcast until you got about a mile inland, which is not where we ever went. So
we always had, so there was a big street that would go all through LA called Lincoln. And in our neighborhood, we would even have t-shirts that said always west of Lincoln, AWOL, always west of Lincoln, because on our side towards the ocean, like literally across the street from Lincoln, we had marine layer and the vibe was different. The sounds were different. The temperature was a good 15 degrees different. And then you literally cross the street, this big street, Lincoln. And the vibration was hectic. It was loud and the sun was blaring on you.
Right. I've never been to Santa Monica, but I lived in San Francisco, and you know, the fog there is very predictable. It comes in every day. Well, in the heat, it comes in every day at 4:30 in the summer. And neighborhood to neighborhood, you'll have a fog neighborhood or not a fog neighborhood, and each of those neighborhoods has a different timbre, right, and feel. So fog's wonderful. So fog's it's a fluid, right? And it is fluid. It's nearly formless. So when we have fog experiences, we're experiencing something that is closer to the unformed, you know, the mystery, before things take shape in form, which is, you know, so all forms arise from no form. And so having fog experiences, you can do this with a steaming cup of tea also. But having a fog, it's really nice because it's very immersive, right? So having a fog experience like that can kind of bring us back to this primordial, preformed time. And I think that's part of what we're recognizing in the fog experience is it's not quite in form yet.
Yeah, and certainly when I'm in a fog, when I'm quote-unquote like driving through a fog, you're much more introspective and you're much more cautious and you're much more definitely I'm in my head when I'm quote unquote in a physical fog for sure.
But also that's where the magic happens is in the space of the unknown when there's no thing, no sound, no one. That's, I think when you, I mean, scientists are now totally recording all this, that everything manifests within that space of nothingness.
Yeah,
where it's not formed yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great allowing for inspired thought to come in. If the egoic mind is running all the time, I know mine wants to run the show, and it does a pretty good job. No, it does a good job of taking over from my essential self. It doesn't do a good job of running the show at all. It messes things up. But if we allowing. In the silence that you said, stillness, silence, how we want nothingness. And then allow for inspired thought. You know, I'm a reader of, and have been for a long time, of A Course in Miracles. And
Marianne Williamson, love her.
Yeah, I've never read her her interpretation of it. I know that she really popularized it in the 80s, but I've never read her work. Inspired by it. But inspired thought and the Course, A Course in Miracles says that the Holy Spirit doesn't speak first, nor the loudest. I'm paraphrasing here. I think what the Course means by that is sitting in stillness and allowing spaciousness allows the still, small, very quiet, inspired thoughts to arise. The quick response, the quick to jump in, finishing someone's sentence as they're speaking. This is I interpret that as almost like an egoic need to be heard and to be right or to create drama.
That's interesting.
but stillness. You know, there was at this Fawn, you talked about the Podfest conference that we were at that we met at, and there was a wonderful presenter, Raquel Ark, A-R-K, I think her name is. She was talking about how if you're interviewing someone, it takes almost 8 seconds for the subject to be able to sit with the question and have an honest, informed, spontaneous, truly spontaneous answer to arise that's not part of a rehearsed pattern. So she was really advocating for the allowing of spaciousness. And that's, it's difficult to do because we don't practice that very much.
It's very uncomfortable. As I'm interrupting you, it's very uncomfortable because I think we all know that in that space, what can come up, all the things that need to come up will come up, and maybe we want to suppress that. Maybe not go there.
Yeah, that's a great insight. Like keep it busy so that
we don't have to deal with it.
Right. No, the stillness, spaciousness, and silence can be really uncomfortable. And that's one of the reasons why we made Now Tone Therapy is in 3 minutes, it gives a complete life cycle. You know, it allows people to experience a complete life cycle of emptiness, stillness. Then a sort of inspired intention to act. Then from stillness emerges sounds. Those sounds vary and change over time, as all forms do. And then those sounds fade away, as all forms do, and return to stillness again. So we made something that in 3 minutes, this is a hardware device, right? It's a hardware meditation device, two little speakers you hold in your hands, but it's really an experience. And it's an experience of a life cycle over and over again. And we made it only 3 minutes long. And then the question, the most popular question we always get is, I love this and I want it to last longer. This is like the conundrum of life, isn't it? when your life is going good, you want the life to live. I want more of that good life. And then when it's not going so well, I would prefer not to have this particular life right now. So we made Now in 3 minutes to give you a complete life cycle of a stillness, emerging form, and then form that fades and returns to stillness. And if we made it continuous without the ending gap, without that ending into return to stillness, we would not have made something that is true. And one of the overriding experiences with tone therapy is that there is a kind of truth that comes through. There are multiple truths, but there's this emerging from nothing, returning to nothing is true. That's a kind of truth, and it's experience. That's truth.
Now, were you also inspired? I know that there are certain practices of meditation that, they bang a gong and you're supposed to focus on the sound, and then the sound obviously fades away, and that's like your entry point to a meditation. You can say no.
He's thinking.
Short answer, no. Longer answer. I was trained and practiced as an audio product design engineer for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so after you breadboard a circuit and you build it out, and then you run some signals through it, and then you listen to the result of that circuit. The kind of work that I was doing was for motion picture sound, and this is back in the analog days, and analog noise reduction circuits to keep the sound of the clicks and pops and hiss and haze of a motion picture optical soundtrack from getting in the way of the speech and the music. So I was working on noise reduction systems. And one aspect of my job was to listen to the effect of the circuits I had built. And that meant listening and following sounds all the way down into the background haze of the optical soundtrack or magnetic tape recording medium in those days. And I realized that when I followed sound so intensely like that, in the context of my job as an audio engineer, in the context of designing products and listening to them, that I found I found I could not be thinking at the same time as listening. If I was truly bringing an intentional attention to listening,
right,
I could not be thinking at the same time. And then only years later did I say, whoa, wait a minute. That sort of matches up with some of the checkboxes of what meditation is.
Wow.
You know, an intentional non-judgmental focus on the present moment.
Michael.
But in my case, in the aural dimension.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's one of the reasons music is so healing. I think most songs are 3 minutes, or I looked it up. It's 3 minutes and 20 seconds are most songs. And lately, I read that it's now 20 seconds shorter these days.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's because people just don't have the attention span. Or
see, when I was a pup in the 60s, progressive music, you know, the FM radio, progressive rock, right? the song suite, the 8 or 9 or 12 minute extended version that mm-hmm. would then be cut, and you need to make a 3 minute and 20 second single version of that. So yeah, there are these different durations. The pop song, 3 minutes, three classic pop song or symphonic form, much longer. But they both have, you know, start, evolution, and ending, and so connecting with the impermanence, that, you know, the arising from nothing and to hearing something, and that something changes and then something goes away. I used to love, you know, I'd have a, you know, get your favorite 45 RPM record and say, man, I will just leave that thing on all day long, and then mm-hmm. we'll just go over and over and over and over again.
Totally.
You know, I love that so much. But yeah. But at least there was a little bit of gap between the successive plays
right.
of that favorite record.
Right now, question, mm-hmm. audio engineer, the loudness wars. Do you think that those are serving us or not serving us? Like Phil Spector popularized the whole making everything louder, and all the artists were like, make it louder. And so what do they call it? What is that scale? It's like there's like a DR number, like dynamic range, I think it might stand for. And the higher the number, the more actual quiet to loud happens, the whole crescendos. How do you feel about like popular music and the loudness wars?
You know, I came across a quote this morning of Walt Whitman, and he said something like, am I contradictions? Well, I am everything, so be it, with contradiction. So my answer is, loudness wars, good and bad. Aggressive use of compression, that's the type of circuit that reduces loud sounds to the mid-range and brings quiet sounds up to the mid-range to mm-hmm. meet them. It helps with intelligibility of speech. So it's a good technique for speech where you're really trying to focus on the voice, and maybe there's some background noise in the place where you're listening. Road noise, you're in a car, so mm-hmm. FM radio or even AM, going back to the days of AM radio. Loudness compression is almost essential. Early days of telephony. Mm-hmm. Compress the dynamic range to emphasize the volume aspects of the voice that are key to intelligibility. So it's good. When it's used in music, it can be used as a musical effect. And some of the earliest uses of compression, aggressive compression, dynamic range reduction in pop music would be like some of the earlier Beatles. Well, from the time of, Rubber Soul, Beatles Rubber Soul 66, late 65 recordings, when the drum recordings of Ringo's drums were heavily compressed. So you would get this, the kick drum would slam in, and then there would be this reduction in volume following the kick drum hit, and then there would be a rapid swelling back up in between the kick drum beats. And what would happen is you'd get a cymbal sound that was quite unlike a normal cymbal. Normally when you hit a cymbal, you hear the pang, crash, decay. But these early recordings of Ringo's drum kit, and with only two mics, with heavy compression, you'd get a swelling of a cymbal that was like a backward sound. So like, then you're hearing, oh my God, the world has gone backwards. Or something is, you know, in the middle of this beat is a part that seems like it's backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a beautiful use of compression. Now, the worst use of compression is when you take the entire song, the entire production, and smash that down so that there's almost no moment-to-moment amplitude variation, you know, maybe a dB or two of amplitude variation, so that it slams and the broadcast channel, the recording channel, in an attempt to make that song appear to be louder than those songs around it. But when everyone does it, there's no difference, right? So you haven't achieved the end of standing out. You've just literally leveled the playing field amongst all the participants. So that's the answer. So dynamic range and processing. Good, bad, and ugly, right?
Speaking of good, bad, and ugly, I have a question to pose. I have my own theories, but not really. I would love your take on technically, scientifically, vibrationally, why sounds affect us the way they do. For example, the good, you know, hearing a good sound that will soothe you, or hearing a piece of music that for 3 minutes makes your ego mind be quiet so you can totally just listen without having your own input. And I think that's why music can be so moving, because it takes you out of yourself and mm-hmm. into the wider spectrum of the universe. But, and then you hear sounds like, I heard about the government's having a certain sound wave that can destroy somebody. Remember, Matt, we would watch, it was a couple years ago, how they would, like, one force would, out in the ocean, point the sound at a ship that would make them go crazy.
Right.
You know, what is it about sound? It's this other realm. Sound as it relates to us as human beings connecting with one another and understanding one another, or the other way around, making us fight each other, or causing harm to our bodies. And then there's also sound. There's sound therapy, sound baths. There are these sounds that actually will heal cells. What is it? It's really, it's like diving into the ocean with discovering all these things that we're not aware of yet, you know?
Yeah. It's, I'll try to give, a short answer. And to make the answer shorter, I'm going to put aside, idiomatic expression, of sounds. So let's group music that has genres. New age music, jazz, hip hop, rock, rap, whatever. Wrap it all up in one balloon and put it to the side for a moment so that we can concentrate on the more abstract qualities of sound and not the idiomatic expression that's culturally informed. So I'm not responding to music because it's from the place and time of my birth and early childhood. It's you know, it's comforting to me because it reminds me of home. Or it reminds me of a certain being a certain age. So let's take all of that aside, because that's all true. But my work and my understanding comes through the empirical work that I've done with more abstract sound and the basic physical dimensions of sound, that is amplitude, how loud or soft, a frequency, how high or how low, timbre, which is another word for tone, that is the tone quality. Is it buzzy or is it more flute-like, simple sine waves? And then how are those qualities combined together? And then how do they change over time? Now, when you opened the show by talking about Santa Monica and the ocean, and this is something, you know, this is a sound that a lot of people are familiar with, is crashing waves or even lapping water. That is broadband sound. It's a lot of frequencies all at the same time, mashed up together, that the ear interprets as a shh, psh, psh, right? It's a lot of different frequencies. You don't recognize any one particular frequency in a noise source like that, broadband noise source. And noise doesn't mean, and here I'm just saying, using it as an engineering term, noise, without any value judgment attached to it. So it's just broadband signal that we would call noise. The opposite of that would be a single tone, like you would hear from a Tibetan bowl as you were scraping the striker around the outside of the bowl. More pure tone sound. So we have noise. Oh, there's a continuum between noise and pure tone. And both of those types of sounds can affect us psychologically because there can be some truths. The sounds that are impactful, I think, the sounds that are impactful are expressions of truth. And then our soul and mind resonates to truth. You know, when someone lies to you, there's a discomfort that's associated with that, this shared knowing that the person knows that they're lying, and it comes across in their voice, and then you know that they're lying, and you know that they know that you know. So the whole thing is a big ball of discomfort. And, you know, we've lived through, and we're currently living through, a lot of the chaos of disinformation and lack of truth. So music and sound is a way for us to parse our way through an intentional misuse of sound to obscure and to confuse and to sow chaos. You know, the former president would not have been elected had so many of us given that person attention and listened to that person's sound.
Right.
You know, we're all somewhat complicit in bringing our attention to lies.
There is.
Well, you would think that, oh my God, lies have to be called out and reacted to. Well, no, that feeds the monster. Let's you know, my work is an attempt to say, well, here's truth. Let's bundle up all the lies and turn our backs to them. Turn our backs to that profanity and inhabit truth and see how that feels.
Right.
That's where, how do you?
And that's where we relax. And that's, so when people say, well, now makes me really, now tone therapy really gets me relaxed. Well, in part, that's because you're not getting lied to.
How do you do that, though? How do you turn your back on it?
Yeah, it has a nasty habit of, unless you call it out for what it is, it has a nasty habit of just being repeated and echoed and echoed and echoed.
In your own mind.
Sometimes, yes, and sometimes just in popular culture. Or
yeah, well, to Fawn's question, how do you tune that out? Well, it's practice. This is another type of mindfulness practice that you have to have an intention. You have to willfully use your attention. You know, bring. And I'm always combining the word attention with an A and intention. You have to have an intention to listen attentively, and to direct your attention, because.
But to interrupt.
This is free will. We have the free will to do this.
How do we do that?
You can substitute it with something else. To begin, well, you can get a singing bowl. If you play an instrument, pluck a string on an instrument or blow a tone and hum to yourself.
So causing an interference.
No, I wouldn't call it an interference. I would call it a shift in focus as an aid. These are aids to give the mind another form object to alight upon, and doing that intentionally. Free will is something that it's like a muscle, right? Sometimes you want to exercise your free will, and other times you don't. You know, I know that I have this problem. Well, I know what my true essential self would, consciousness would have me do. But then there is like, well, let me just dip my toe into this mess over here. and see how that feels.
Yeah, no. I totally get it. Sometimes I'll wake up, and first thing in the morning, my brain just starts spinning. And if I wake up too early, and I know I'm going to be tired all day, I don't want to think. I just want to go back to sleep, for instance. And so I will turn on and listen to something. And, you know, that kind of sets my kind of higher mind, my thinking mind, starts to quiet down and starts to quiet down. And finally, then I can go back to sleep. You know, and it's just a question of, I'm just not ready to spin it all up yet.
This all kind of reminds me of when we had our first child. And that's Al would be crying and crying and crying, and I would do everything in my power to ease the situation, ease her. You know, I would start from the basics, like, is it a diaper? Is it a burp? Is something tight on her, like her clothes don't fit or whatever, all that, and nothing would work and she'd still be crying. And is this kind of like on the realm of sound, changing things up? So I said interference, but Matt will like call it cutting your key in martial arts. So Matt would take Elle and he would take her into another room or take her out in nature, like remove her from that situation, give her a different perspective, different sounds, different temperature, different environment. Yeah. Going back to communication, and maybe you're hearing a lie. Usually I know when someone is lying when I can feel a gap in my brain. Like they're talking, but it doesn't make sense on some other level, on a deep, deep level where there's a gap. Like there's just a gap is all I can describe it as. There's a point in time where there's nothingness. And to get at the truth, my question was, how do we do that? How do we get to the truth? Do we dive into that gap where there's nothingness, where in your brain there's no sound?
Well, you have, you suggest a good way to do it, which was paying attention to your body signals. And this is easier for some people than others, you know, for people who are, it's not my first mode, right? Paying attention to my body and my emotions. It's partially gendered. It can be developed. We can all develop that. So yeah, paying attention to what your body, how does it feel in the gut? How does it, right? Tension, no tension. Yeah. So I think you're certainly right about recognizing what the body is doing.
It's so weird because I don't consider my brain as part of my body. When you're saying that, I'm like, it's not in my body, Michael. It's in my brain.
Oh,
the
dear.
Brain is the body. Isn't that weird, though? I just realized that. But yeah, there's I have to get back into that space. Like, what? I always say this. I always have. When I'm talking to someone on the phone, I can always tell when they're not listening because I find myself shouting or my voice goes up and I'm trying to get louder. And as soon as I catch myself doing that, I'm like, oh man, this person is not listening to me. So, you know, but I can't put blame on that because I think we're in society now in such a way that we all have so much pain. And you can describe it as not pain. You can describe it as there's so much that needs attention and we all haven't had attention placed on the things that desperately need it. So that's why people interrupt each other, because they desperately want to be heard. Yeah. And they desperately also want to be hearing the other person. But if both sides are having such turmoil in a way, maybe that's not the right word. Matt just raised his eyebrows up because I'm sure that's not what he would say. He says, I tend to get negative with my descriptions, but what I'm saying is, I think we're all experiencing so much, and it's a give and take. And right now, we need to speak. We need to have our sounds need to be expressed and released. at the same time, I think we're in a culture where there's so much coming at us, where we're hearing so much and we're seeing so much, and all of our senses are on overload, that the basic sound, the basic thing is the sound. And I think if we start from there, I think that will start some healing, is if we go back to quiet and then slowly reintroduce sound to each other. If we go back into the quiet and really listen to ourselves, and then we're able to listen to the birds outside, we're able to listen to a new friend standing in front of us to understand what they're really saying, mm-hmm. instead of putting our own baggage, our own history into what they're saying. Do you guys see what I'm saying?
I totally get it. No argument. I mean, we're certainly, our brains are getting reprogrammed to be like these multitasking monsters, and it's hard for us to focus solely on one thing at a time anymore, because we don't have to. I've got my computer and I can Google this while I'm talking to that, and I can see this and I can listen to that, and I can do a million things at once. And, you know, I think on some level it does our senses a service, but on another level it doesn't. It makes it harder to be quiet and still.
And I think we should go back to in utero, you know, like hearing that ocean sound when you're in the womb. And
well, you know, to stay on this idea of truth, and truth being comforting and untruth not being comforting, I'm a comfortably lapsed Roman Catholic, and so I don't have any problem like using the Christian terminology and mythology, so you can substitute whatever your favorite words are for these concepts. But, you know, in the beginning, before there was anything, and then there was something, and then what happened? God said. See, the first thing that happened was God speaking. First is nothing. Then God speaks. Then God creates light.
Oh my God. Right? Yeah.
So there's, it's really kind of huge when you think that, and light is what we use to be able to perceive forms, you know, objects. Object forms, sound objects. We are a bit more ephemeral because they are truly not fixed in form. They're moving through time. They're constantly evolving through time, so they're less like a form than they are like energy. So I like to remind myself that before there was anything, before there was light in physical objects, there was sound, and before there was sound, there was nothing.
Wow!
So you can kind of work your way back to silence, and then that. The experience of that stillness.
You know, I'm a big fan of Greg Braden and Joe Dispenza, and I spent like a week long time with Greg Braden in one of his workshops, and we were concentrating on sound, and he kept emphasizing that as creatures, he said we are unique. I really don't think so, because I think every creature makes sound, but he was talking about how your sound, your ability to vocalize something, manifests things. And because we can create sound from this area, the throat, that it is a tool that will manifest things in physical form. I tend to think every creature will do that, right? Birds will do that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know where I'm getting at? Like, I just think...
Like, you got to be careful with that manifestation stuff, you know. It works.
Oh, right. Because you hear all the time, if you speak it out loud, that's the first step. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can manifest, you know, you can manifest, the ego can manifest quite well too. And then that's going to be a boatload of pain eventually.
Well, it depends, right? Because, you know, I would say almost on a most primordial level, a bird will make noise in order to announce that they're there, and then a mate shows up, and then da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, that's a very straight line, very scientific way of looking at things. you know, versus, you know, I imagine I have a winning lottery ticket and boom, it's right there. And that feels more mystical. And yet, you know, the birds did. It's just how it works. And
yeah, yeah. When you get to the level of the human where we have conscious intention, we can load that manifestation activity or the gap. Deepak Chopra likes to say it's like insert the intention in between the gap and thoughts, or prep the intention with a gap, and then into that a gap of no thinking, and then into that gap insert an intention, and then boom, you know, you've kind of loaded your intention with that manifestation. You've loaded the manifestation with an intention that's more conscious. So yeah, we're not bird-like in that way, I guess.
Mind the gap. Remember?
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap.
Have you been to...
That's great. I love that one. Isn't
well,
it great?
It just reminds me of London when I would get on the tube. What did they call it? I don't remember what they called it, but the train, you know?
The underground.
The underground. And you would always hear that voice come up and it would say, mind the gap.
And I wonder how many, you know, what percentage of people actually did mind the gap?
I did minds. When I was there. I was like, I don't want to get hurt. But yeah, I think the first 20 times you hear it, you certainly hear it. But then I think after a while, it just kind of blends into your reality and you know what you're doing. So
yeah. In China, it's funny. They don't tell you to mind the gap. They tell you quite clearly to step back from the train. And they have right on the floor, they've got... you know, stand here. Even before COVID, they would, you know, painted on the floor would be the footsteps. So you stand here, you stand there, and say, and that's really interesting, you know, because you know, it's a bit more of an authoritarian. If we're just going to compare day in the life in London, day in the life in Shenzhen or Beijing, it's a bit more authoritarian experience in China. So rather than this allowing, you know, in Britain, the subway safety message of minding the gap, which is a beautiful double entendre, right? Mind the physical gap. And maybe you might want to consider paying attention to what your mind is doing in the gap in between thoughts or paid, right? But in China, they say, don't go there.
I was wondering where you
not, don't go there.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. It's so true. And there, you know what? Now I get it. And it's quite beautiful. Sometimes
we will,
you need to hear
we
that.
Will take care, we will take care of that gap for you.
No, yeah, maybe, but, yeah. But you know what? Sometimes you need to hear that. Don't go there. Because I can easily go into this messed up memory or messed up thing. Yeah. You know, just don't go there.
Oh,
someone
Lord.
Has to tell me
just
that.
Don't go there.
See, I'm just laughing because every time, like, we start talking over a movie, because that's what we do as a household, and my wife is like, "Can you guys please be quiet? Because I want to hear this." Then we all yell, "Don't go in there!" Because that's something you yell during a horror movie, right? Like, you know, the stupid heroine is about to walk in and encounter the you know the, our antagonist.
I used to watch movies in peace and quiet, and
no,
I am
no,
grateful.
No.
I'm grateful I have a family. However, looking at a movie, yeah. It's just the movie experience I haven't had in many years, because these guys will just talk. I don't understand. Is something happening to my hearing that I can't listen and hear at the same time? Like, I can't hear the movie and hear you guys at the same time? Are you guys able to hear what's going on in the movie?
No, of course not. I'm not paying attention to what's going on in the
so
movie.
Why
I'm playing.
Oh, my
God. I'm clowning. That's what I do.
I'm trying to watch a movie. Anyway, we digress.
That's what we do.
Another thing that trips me out is when I hear politicians, or I hear just anybody, actually, when they start raising their voice... Like, what is happening?
Right.
I don't trust the person that raises their voice. It just makes me feel like they're losing control, or they're lying, or they're trying to really push something they know is not right, or pushing something that they know you don't think is right. So they're going to yell it. When someone has an even keel speaking voice,
mm-hmm.
Why is that so much better?
Well, it depends on where your head is at, you know. Yeah, one of the unfortunate great lessons Adolf Hitler told us is a lie repeated loud enough, often enough, becomes truth in people's minds. Wow. Speaking with a calm, even voice, you have the opportunity to lose what I call the soundbite test. So if I can snip out like 2 seconds of what you've said that totally contradicts what you've said, you lose. And that's where we are today in America. We're very much a soundbite mentality because we're kind of fumbling through so many things at a given moment. So if I say something like, such and such is bad, and I don't really mean it or I mean it sarcastically, that meaning can still get lost because of somebody can slice out just that tiny soundbite.
This challenge of linguistics, words, right? Subject, object. Language and how loud or not loud language is spoken is fascinated me for a long time. And I think that's in part what brought me to this pure tone work that I do, which is carries truth, but it's not being carried by words. So it can be experienced as truth and not be rejected or folks' radar don't go up as quickly. So I think what we're able to do with tone therapy in a very short period of time, and sometimes even just a fraction of a second, a few seconds, is convey a sense of truth that transcends the limitations of subject-object language, duality. Because it's so easy to be reactive to the words, he said. And then he said,
should we play a little bit right now, Michael?
We could, yeah. You're ready?
Ready.
Okay. All right, let's just take 3 minutes and listen to now, the present moment, and the way we can make this easier is by listening to a little meditation device, a sound meditation device called Now Tone Therapy. It takes just 3 minutes to listen to this. And all you have to do is bring an intention to listen attentively. Now, it's natural for thoughts to arise. And as they do, just notice that you have thoughts arising, but bring your attention back to the sounds. And enjoy the gap between thoughts. You'll notice that, and that's a beautiful thing because that's your essential self. That is, what is noticing is consciousness. And let's just give it a listen.
Okay, here we go.
I like to have a big breath, you know, big release, and then and honor that space, and then gradually come back to the business at hand. It doesn't have to be long.
Can I describe mm-hmm. what goes through my spirit?
mm-hmm.
What I get from it is, so I had to remind myself to just focus on the sound and nothing else. And then I started to actually see waves, like when you throw a pebble into water and you see the rings expanding one by one. I saw that because I was trying to close my eyes mm-hmm. so I could really just focus on one thing, which was the sound. And it made me realize that that's the only way to really get to a healing state, whether it's emotional healing, physical healing, because life is really quite simple if you allow for the focus on one thing to occur. And not putting your attention and your focus on so many things at the same time. Because I think what happens is pieces of ourselves end up dispersing everywhere. And we're not there. Like, if you could imagine you're a whole thing. And if one piece of you goes over here, one piece of you goes in this other direction. It's like you're exploding into space in all these different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not in the now. And you're not in that one point in the universe. And for anything to happen, for your dreams to come true, for you to be able to love, for you to be able to see, you have to bring yourself into that one pinpoint part of the universe for a little bit. And it's apropos that this is called now. Did you mean for that to happen, Michael?
Yeah, it has two meanings, right? The present moment, and also it's an acronym for new origin waveforms. So each moment is a new moment being created and carried forward through sound waves, new origin, making a new moment. So yeah, the present moment and also new origin through waveforms.
I have a little story that will maybe help. What I'm talking about is there was a moment I was on a photo shoot and I was going through something horrible. There was some trauma. It was actually a stalker was after me, and I was out in the what seemed like out in the middle of nowhere, but it was where I worked, the corporation I was working for. It was there, and I had had a harrowing night, actually. The next morning, so I went a night without sleep. So much was happening. I was under so much stress. The next morning at 6 a.m., I was on a photo shoot. I was a photographer. And I was standing there, and this woman that I worked with, who worked for the corporation also, She was standing there. She was in management. So she was helping me with the photo shoot. And she knew what was going on. She knew what had happened. Everyone was on high alert in the building. And she looked at me. She smiled. And she said, "Child of God, are you happy?" First of all, for her to say "child of God" because I wasn't religious, it tweaked me a little bit. And then for her to say, "Are you happy?" with a smile on her face, it really bothered me. Like, are you crazy? You know what's been happening. The whole building is like on alert, and you're asking me if I'm happy. And I don't know what I said to her. I probably didn't say anything. I probably looked really confused and I was exhausted. And she said, she kept repeating that to me. And she knew, or maybe I said, "Are you crazy?" And she said, "Look, right in this moment, right now." So she gave me these steps. She's like, "Right now, where are you standing? Right now, are you not standing in front of me? Right now, are you not in a room that is beautiful? Right now, are you not surrounded by people who are protecting you? Right now, don't you have everything that is making you, your body, everything comfortable? Right now, is it not peaceful? Right now," like she kept saying that, and she brought me to that precise moment that if you break it down, if you keep breaking down right now, right now, right now, everything else disappears and everything is okay. If you go into that space of right now, you can strip out everything else that is happening, that is distracting and pulling you in different directions. And I think that's what happens when you listen to this.
Yeah, and it, you know, getting to right now then allows for the inspired thought that allows, that can empower change, or in the case of your story, taking appropriate protective actions, asking for help. All of this can come from a truly empowered, inspired moment. So it's not passive. It's really still action and stillness, really. That being able to connect to the present moment doesn't mean that we can't function in the world. We can function better, actually.
Absolutely better. Yeah. Matt, you're quiet.
Yes.
Why are you quiet?
Just because.
You're in the now?
Maybe.
Well, we know that sound is one of the key factors in creation. First comes nothing. Then comes sound, and then comes what?
The 10,000 things.
Yes, the 10,000 things. But I would argue first comes thought, then comes sound, then comes...
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because you have to set your intention before you can...
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now we're getting metaphysical.
Well, shall we continue this for another time? And leave it
sure.
here in mm-hmm. the peaceful...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Peaceful now?
Then the peaceful now.
Really, really nice visit and a wonderful way to finish here and for me to start my day.
Michael, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being with
thank
us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. Yeah.
I look forward to future conversations with you. There's so much to explore.
Seems that way, doesn't it?
It does. I think this conversation really had so many facets we could have gone into.
Yes.
That I really wanted to go into, but I was trying to be quiet.
Me too, actually.
I don't like it when you're quiet, Matt.
I know, but you know, you did shush me at one point.
I did.
That was the ocean waves. So.
That was not a mother lovingly shush.
Oh. I would like to swap some stories around, place as a teacher. And we can do that another time. I love that idea that, Santa Monica is a teacher. There are many different kinds of teachers. We can have a whole conversation around teachers and students, different kinds of teachers.
Absolutely.
I love that places can be teachers. For me, reed flutes are teachers. And I'll try to paraphrase the classic Rumi poem. The reed flute, which is... Oh my God, I'm speaking to a woman that should be quite familiar with the reed flute.
I was going to say, Rumi's my family.
Yeah. So these reeds grow by the side of, where it's moist, by the side of a stream. And they reach up to the heavens. The flowers catch the light, and the roots are in the ground. So it's really a beautiful conduit between the sky and the earth. And when these reeds are picked and dried and then shaped into flutes, the sound that they make when you play a reed flute, and I believe this Rumi poem is called the Song of the Reed Flute, it's a very mournful timbre. And that's because the reed flute remembers its right relationship between the sun and the earth and its relationship to its brethren. And it longs for all of that together is the beloved. So it longs for the sun, it longs for its feet to be in the ground, it longs to be next to its brethren in the reed grove. And the sound and the music that comes from the reed flute is quite poignantly, has a quite poignant longing. Timbre.
Nice.
That's beautiful.
So that's a teacher, you know. So the reed flutes for me, I used to make these things. I found them growing up in coastal Maine when my daughters and I were on vacation and when they were very young. And I started making these flutes. And so they became the flute itself, the reed itself taught me how to make a flute. And then through playing them, there's other kinds of learnings that come in from those teachers. So there are plant teachers, there are place, you know, city teachers. That's all kinds of teachers.
Definitely. The squirrel outside has been my teacher for the past year.
What, be greedy and get fat?
No, the squirrel comes up and I just learned so much from the squirrel. Like, just keep, you know, just simple. Play and they survive out there. Here we are inside. It gets negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit out here. And they're still like, chill, you know. They move on with life and they're still cute and happy and bouncing around and playing all the time.
There is that.
Before we go, I'm going to ask you a question, both of you. Michael, you first. What is your favorite sound in the world?
My favorite sound in the world is a sound I never get to hear because I have tinnitus, which is, you know, described as ringing in the ears. You hear tones all the time. It came on very, very gradually, I think, as a result of the kind of loud audio right. work I did early in my career. And I no longer hear silence. That would be my favorite sound, would be the sound of silence.
Wow. How about you, Matt?
Yeah. Wow. As he said it, it's like, you know, that moment. We have air purifiers and they run all the time in the house for the most part. But there's a moment where I take the air purifier out of our bedroom and I move it into our study so I can begin my day. And that moment where I unplug it and I can feel the whole world just kind of go, like everything's quiet. And sometimes I'll turn off the air purifier by the girls and I literally can feel a shift in their energy.
Just like we can exhale.
Everything just kind of just settles.
Mm. Yeah.
My favorite sound, I have two, is you guys laughing.
That's a good sound.
The laughter of our children and the laughter of Matt.
I was going to go that way, but there's a visual component for me as well.
And I have another sound, and I want to know what the visual component is. I just want to finish. Is the other thing is when I reach out and I hear a friend talking back to me on the other end. That is a lifesaver right there.
True.
And it's not fair because I'm the one who asked the question, so I had time to think about it while you guys were talking. But when I need to hear someone's voice to let me know I'm not alone. When I my mind goes into that lie of I'm all alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was the visual component you were talking
about?
Oh, just
there's a brightness in a laugh, right? And I'll see that on, especially Elle's face, but I'll see that on everyone's face as they're laughing all of a sudden. It's like a little spotlight is shined on their faces. There's a glint in the eye. There's the compression of the cheek into the smile, right? So it's there's a visual, because I was thinking the exact same thing, but it's the two of them together. Strictly sound, it's that shoo.
You know what it is? It's a word, it's a term you used when I first met you. It's a divine spark.
Heyo.
Right?
Yes, it is, very much. It is kind of this connection. It feels like a connection with something higher.
All right, everybody. We're going to wind it down. Thank you so much, Michael, for being with us today.
And you're very welcome, folks. Great to be here.
And everyone, we are going to have a link to the Now so you can hear more and you can figure out where you can get your hands on these things. They're amazing. I've never been near a hockey puck, but is this what it looks like, Matt?
I think a hockey puck's a little bit flatter and maybe a little bit wider, but so the company is called Solu, S-O-L-U. And it's the Now, and it's two speakers.
This is not a commercial, guys. This is like us for real, loving this device. We'll put more into our show notes about it. Michael, thank you so much again. And friends, we will talk to you in a few days.
Yes, we will.
Stay in the now. Take care. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.